The Bill Shakespeare Project presents This Week in Shakespeare for the week ending Monday, October the 31st, 2016. Hola, Bartophiles, and welcome to the 127th episode of This Week in Shakespeare, a podcast brought to you by the Bill Shakespeare Project. This is our weekly opportunity to let you know about the latest and greatest in Willie Shakespeare headlines coming at you every Tuesday. The goal here is to hit you with a quick blast, no more than 10 minutes tops, of Bard-related news. Plus, we'll try to serve up some historical dates for what were the past 7 days of the year. So, this week's news stories included: Exposé reported that actor Mark Rylance is boycotting the Royal Shakespeare Company over their links to the company British Petroleum. Shakespeare's Globe in London announced that the tenure of current artistic director Emma Rice will end in April of 2018. She's only been around a short while, but did change the direction of the theater, adding lighting and sound effects, plus a different sensibility to the production. The reception from the public has been mixed, from critics less so, and even lesser still from the board, as it appears. No replacement has been announced as of yet. Now, The Stage in the UK ran a piece on the ongoing fallout over that departure, with Shakespeare's Globe taking heat for being stodgy. Scholar Richard Wilson, however, disagrees and felt the Globe, as an academic institution, had a responsibility to take the action that they did. The Chicago Reader ran a wonderful piece on the variance of delivery of a single line in Shakespeare, taking on the great Beatrice and Benedick kill Claudio scene from Much Ado About Nothing. On the occasion of the Oxford University Press's announcement that Shakespeare had co-writers on 17 of his plays, including Christopher Marlowe on all three parts of Henry VI, The Guardian ran a piece on the relationship between those two writers. And the University of Pennsylvania released an article with more details on the big data analysis that helped the Oxford University Press determine those collaborations. The technique is used word adjacency network analysis, and it's pretty complicated, but the article does a great job of bringing clarity to the process, to which I can only say, hail to the geeks. Kingsman Shakespeare Festival announced their slate of plays to be run in Thousand Oaks, California next summer, Love's Labor's Lost and Julius Caesar. The Salt Lake Tribune covered the announcement that the head of the Utah Shakespeare Festival received recognition from the Institute of Outdoor Drama. The Daily Camera ran the announcement by Colorado Shakespeare Festival of their 2017 season, including The Taming of the Shrew, Hamlet, Julius Caesar, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, plus an original practice performance of Henry VI Part 3. And finally, The Guardian reviewed The Tempest by Flute Theater, running through the weekend in Richmond, England, giving it 4 of 5 stars and calling it groundbreaking in its production for children and young people with autism and their families. Now let's take a look back on the last 7 days and how they relate to Shakespearean history, both his and the history in his plays. October the 25th is St. Crispin's Day, the day of feasting in honor of the twin saints Crispin and Crispian. On this date in 1415, the forces of Henry V won a decisive victory over the French at Agincourt. This victory of a vastly outnumbered English army over the French is depicted in Henry V. Also on October 25th, this time in 1460, Parliament passed the Act of Accord, which, while leaving Henry VI on the throne of England, named Richard, Duke of York, and his descendants the heirs to the crown, even though Henry's own son Edward was 7 years old. And this was all seen in Part 3 of Henry VI. On October 26, 1996, the film adaptation of Twelfth Night, directed by Trevor Nunn and starring Helena Bonham Carter as Olivia, premiered in the U.S. On October 27, 1401, Catherine of Valois was born. Daughter of Charles VI of France, she would later be married to Henry V as part of a peace treaty between England and France, which also named Henry heir to the throne of France. She would give birth to Henry VI, but then after becoming a widow to Henry V, she married Owen Tudor, to whom she birthed Edmund Tudor, the father of the future Henry VII. On October 28, 1978, NBC broadcast the film Kiss, meets the Phantom of the Park, which is what it sounds like. I'm sure it rivals Hamlet. On October 29th, 1618, Sir Walter Raleigh, famed writer and courtier in the time of Elizabeth, was executed by beheading for conspiring against her successor, James I. On October 30th, 1470, the second reign of Henry VI began, after the Earl of Warwick defeated the Yorkists in battle and drove Edward IV into exile. The reign wouldn't last long, less than half a year before Edward IV took the throne again. This is depicted in the third part of Henry VI. On October 31st, 1396, Isabella of Valois, daughter of Charles VI of France, was married to the widowed Richard II at the age of 3. When she was widowed after the imprisonment and death of Richard, she refused orders by Henry IV to marry his son, the future Henry V. Instead, she married her cousin Charles, Duke of Orléans. Also on Halloween, but this time in 1460s, hot on the heels of that Parliament passing the Act of Accord, which, while leaving Henry on the throne of England, named Richard Duke of York and his descendants heirs to the throne, well, hot on the heels of that, Richard was made Prince of Wales and the Protector of England, as seen in the third part of Henry VI. And that was your Week in Shakespeare. You've been listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project presentation of This Week in Shakespeare for the week ending October the 31st, 2016. For our blog and previous Twiz episodes, including links to the news stories we've covered, as well as the real Bill Shakespeare Project podcast, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. And we'll catch you next week.